and welcome to the Colts Cover 2 podcast. This is the first impressions edition after the Colts' first-round pick of Leiatu Latu, the UCLA defensive end. A surprise pick, a little bit at 15. I think most of us were thinking, as stuff came off the board, that it was going to be Dallas Turner and not Latu. But this is what I think the easiest way to look at this is, in the past, when Chris Ballard has made these picks, he's often bet on traits. And so the history, I think the reason we all looked at Dallas Turner, although Dallas Turner does have production, he seemed like the toolsiest player, the most Ballard-like player. Ballard's never really had a chance to draft a player like Latu in terms of somebody who he believes is already a polished pass rusher, already natural. I think there's an admission there that maybe where they've gone wrong in the past is assuming that they can develop a toolsy player and tap into those traits and refine them in a way that they haven't done at the college level. There's a long line of guys that didn't work out. Terrell Basham, Kamoko Touré, Ben Banigou, Kwity-Paye. Honestly, Kwity-Paye is what we can get to his fifth year option here in a little bit. But Kwity-Paye is a solid starter for the Colts. He's very good against the run. He had 8.5 sacks last year, but he's not really a force player in terms of as a rusher, in terms of he doesn't dictate to the offense. He's much better as a second effort player as the quarterback moves up in the pocket. What the Colts needed was that force player, somebody who could dictate to the offense what's going to happen. They believe Leiatu Latu is that guy. And it also seems like a little bit of a departure for Ballard. I asked him point blank, you know, is this kind of the thing you've never been able to get before? And he basically said yes. Yeah, he's never really been able to get someone who had the traits he wanted with the production.
Yeah, it's interesting because it was the first defensive player off the board. So we know that's, to them, the highest rated defensive player they had on their board. And Dallas Turner was the guy we figured just because he seemed like a little bit more of a, yeah, Ballard-y for both the tools, but also just a little safer. I mean, there's a little bit of whispers out there, not more than whispers. Injury history with Latu with the neck surgery that he had. That's the one hurdle that they kind of had to get over. But as far as the player goes, you can see how he is sort of the answer to what they haven't added at that position. The past 2 years, he has 34 tackles for loss, 23.5 sacks, two interceptions. It's just so much production. He was the Lombardi Award winner as the top lineman in college football last year. It's no longer the stab at like a, you know, Kwity-Paye, Dio Adangbo, pure traits, and let's just coach him up and let's develop and let's see if it take a couple of years. It's like we're going to plant him in right now, and he's going to theoretically be that guy who, even as a rookie, I think in the position he's in and the strength that he's adding to, they hope he can come in and be that guy who's instantly that difference maker that they needed late in the year when they had a nice pass rush, but when teams went into max protect, they weren't able to affect the game the way that they quite needed to. And we're seeing the way that they built it last year, this just adds it even more. The way he wants to build out Chris Ballard wants to build out a pass defense is all about up front. I mean, again, a lot of people thought they would go cornerback. That's still a position he's never drafted in the first round. And he's making this all about the rush. He wants the rush to be so suffocating that can take over games. And we're going to get a test of whether that works because there's still those huge secondary questions. That's sort of the opportunity cost of what they did here is there's, you know, that there's still not a lot at that outside cornerback room. But if it works the way they want to, where they have Latu rushing next to DeForest Buckner with Dio Adangbo inside, Samson Ebukam on the other side, then you've got Kwity-Paye and Tyquan Lewis in the mix there. Like, that's got to be up there for one of the very best pass rush units in the NFL. And it's that sort of eight-man unit that Ballard has always talked about. Now he finally is in a spot where it's realistic to have eight guys, but also a couple of guys inside and outside now between Buckner and Latu who have at least the potential to be kind of those high-end guys who can win against max protection. And that's what they wanted. That's why they took the swing they did on to Daniil Hunter in free agency, and they fell short of that. And Latu is sort of like the recourse move to that. And I think they're pretty happy to get what they view as, and we know is to be true, as the top defensive player in this draft.
Yeah, I I think one of the things that stuck out to me from Chris Ballard's press conference afterwards, it was just like we asked him about what he was going, what they thought they could get from Latu right away, and he said he thinks he's going to produce as a pass rusher immediately. Those of you who've been following the Colts for a long time know that normally, even with Quiddy Pay's selection in the first round, he kind of said like we think he'll come along as a pass rusher when he's talked about these guys in the past, and that's because they were. They were more traits guys than refined pass rushers. He feels like there's a lot of – like he feels like Latu already knows who he is as a rusher. Inside, outside, long arm. His cross chop is really good. He said he's got three main moves that he works off of, and he's got other stuff, but those are the three main moves. I think one of the things I've learned about pass rushers over the years is that like a lot of young guys try to add as much as they can to their arsenal, but for the most part – what they like, you need to have one or two go-to moves that you can work off of it. And it sounds like, and looks like on film, the clips that I was watching that Latu already knows what his go-tos are. And then he can kind of work off of it. That's where Ballard says this guy's more natural. He's more polished. It's something that's a little bit different. And I was surprised to hear him talk about like how much of an immediate impact he thinks Latu is going to have.
I think that polish is really the difference maker in why they love Latu and why they probably liked him over the other edge rushers that they could have gone after. Is that Quiddy Pay, if you think about him, like he did have 8 sacks last season. He's a good player. We know how good he is against the run, but there's concern. I know the Colts had concerns that like he's exactly what you described, which is one of those players that just has – he's trying to add all these tools, and he has so many, and some of them work in moments, but he has not figured out the mix yet of what his top tools are. And maybe his top tools are never going to quite be, you know, toolsy enough to really, you know, narrow down and be able to set up to win late in the fourth quarter against max protection. And that's Latu already knows who he is. It's worked at a high level, as high level as he can get to for where he was at in college football, but just dominated USC last year and produced just more than anybody else that was in this draft in a major conference. And so of course we got to see how it's going to translate to the NFL. You know, he's a guy that he's like his RAS score, relative athletic score, which is what they always love. He's a 9.37. So it's a little like that's very good. It's a little less of the, you know, pure just athletic profile than they've had, but I think what they're giving up and maybe a little bit of the explosiveness and sort of his, vertical and broad jump numbers, they're what they feel like they're making up instead of that is he's already got that polish. He already knows what his top moves are. He can kind of step in and do that right away. And you give him one-on-one matchups next to DeForest Buckner or even matchups where he has to beat that guy and go through the running back. He's done enough of those clips at a high level, at the level he was just at in college, to believe he can do some of that in the NFL. And so the pick makes a lot of sense. It's just it is interesting that they chose him over Dallas Turner, just because Dallas Turner went 2 picks later and the Vikings traded up for him. So we're not able to, you know, there's one thing to think a certain order coming into the draft. And sometimes the draft plays out. We realize like last year, we realized that the league did not see Will Levis as a first round quarterback. This year, these two players went basically back to back. And so it was sort of like pick your flavor here. And I think a lot of people thought that Dallas Turner would be that player. Latu ends up being that player for them, and that may just come down to do teams have any fears about that neck, you know, procedure that he had. And it just seems like the Colts, and I know they asked a lot of questions about it in the process, they don't seem like they're concerned about it, and that may have been the difference.
Yeah, their team doctors essentially said, the way Ballard explained it, he didn't get into a lot of detail about it. I kind of wish we had another chance to go back and ask him about it again. But he said their team doctors basically said he's played with it for 2 years. He's been explosive. They felt like they've seen him. I think one of the big concerns with neck injuries is kind of what Shaq Leonard went through, where there's diminished athletic ability because of it. And I think because they've seen him go through 2 seasons, that's what he's trying to say, is they've seen him go through 2 seasons and produce, and they haven't seen a drop off. And so that's why they feel fine with it. When it comes to Dallas Turner, and so this is something, you know, that you never know with the evaluations, that kind of thing. But like just using the NFL.com's evaluation of him, you know, this is just some stuff with Turner. Turner's first step quickness and elite closing burst are important building blocks. but he still needs to work on his process from point A to point B. He hasn't learned to create space and angles, need to consistently attack the edges. Needs to work on hand development and diversified approach. The quote from an NFC executive on him is, he's such a talented athlete. One of the biggest mistakes people make is looking past athletic ability and focusing too much on technique or polish when they come out. Just look for dudes and coach the rest of it. Well, if you've been following the Colts and their search for an edge rusher, that's they've been doing that. They've been drafting dudes and trying to coach the rest of it. And it's largely been unsuccessful. They have not unearthed the pass rusher that Chris Ballard has wanted for a really, really long time. And I think that's why in from a need standpoint, I think this and we talked about this on the podcast coming in, but this is Ballard's white whale. And I think there's probably a lot of you out there who would say his white whale should be something else. But his white whale, other than the quarterback position, has been he has not been able to find the dominant edge player that he's been searching for since he got here, essentially. And this is his chance. He felt like this was his chance. It's a unique draft in that 14 offensive players went off the board before anybody picked a defensive player, allowing him to have his pick of the players on the board. And he saw his chance and he took it. We also know that he was going after his white whale in free agency. They went after Daniel Hunter, which he referenced tonight.
Yeah, that's that was a nugget. We kind of got the owners meeting that he kind of put back out there. This and that's what's interesting about this is I knew that was their plan going in for agency was to really go after Daniel Hunter. When they didn't get him, what was interesting is that they didn't. It's not like they said, "Okay, we have this money left over. Let's go spend it elsewhere." They didn't spend it at all. They did not added a starter until today. This is the first outside starter that they've added this offseason. But it shows you exactly what the type of player they were looking for is that high-end difference-making edge rusher. And it's interesting, just a couple of days ago when we did this pod, we kind of had this conversation wondering about, like, is Ballard willing to evolve enough or is this just going to be kind of same old? I think we are seeing a little bit of evolution out of him. On one hand, like, he's always loved the offensive and defensive line, so this does stick to that. But, like we mentioned, he went for production over just traits. He took a swing at a little bit of a risky swing given the medical at a premium position, really went after a dude at a premium position. And another thing I'm sure we'll get into, he was trying to trade up. He said he made a significant or major offers, I think was his phrase, to move up from 15. And if you piece together the other things he said, that was almost certainly for a pass catcher because the other guys that went above it was offensive tackles, quarterbacks, and pass catchers. The two of those positions they didn't need. And they ended up getting the top defensive player. And he didn't say they were trying to move up for, you know, just to make sure they got Latu. They were trying to move up with a significant offer for somebody else. And so I think that was either Roma Dunze. I think it was very likely Roma Dunze. It was possible it was Brock Bowers, or maybe that was their attempt to get Marvin Harrison Jr. and they just couldn't get the offer together. But that's another bit of evolution. We talk a lot about, like, it felt like a couple of years ago, does he care about wide receiver at all? And then here he is, wide receiver, or maybe it was a tight end, but going, trying to make a huge move where the type of trades are trying, I mean, that would have been giving up picks to go up and get that type of player. So they were trying to take a swing here. They still made a pretty big one in Latu. They were trying to make an even bigger one with the trade up for what seems like a pass catcher. And that's a little different from Ballard.
Yeah. Let's get into the speculation right now. Let's go for it. I'm with you. I think it's a Dunze. I think it's Roma Dunze that they were going up for a couple of reasons. Number one, Bowers went with the 13th pick. And it kind of felt like as the draft was playing out that outside of the selections of Michael Penix Jr. to the Falcons and Bo Nix to the Broncos, that, you know, it kind of went like how we felt. Like everything kind of went up until I honestly, at this point, we're taping this at 1:30 in the morning. I'm standing outside in the cold because of the way we record these podcasts. I can't remember what happened after the Colts made their pick because we were working so much. But, you know, it felt like those were the two you know, picks that really didn't, that came out of nowhere. Everything else kind of went to the board. And that makes me think that if there was going to be a big move up, they were probably trying to jump the Bears.
Yeah, the Bears took Adunze at 9.
Because everyone thought the Bears were going to take Adunze with Caleb Williams.
And I saw where Ryan Poles, the Bears GM, said that there was someone in his draft room that was having to pull him back from trading up for Rome Adunze. He wanted him so badly, but they barely have any picks. And they said, just play it confidently. So the Bears were that team that a lot of people thought would trade down because they barely have any picks. So that's almost certainly one of the teams that Chris Ballard was calling. But that's where it makes sense. It's Adunze. If that's the player they were thinking about trading up for, there's no way they're giving up that pick, almost regardless of what you're offering. So then can you get above them? Can you get to – that's where the Falcons at 8 made sense. Honestly, I think that's probably what the Falcons should have done rather than taking the quarterback that they're going to want to sit for 4 to 5 years. I think they could have done a little bit better than that. But the other thing that's interesting, too, is you think about it. Marvin Harrison Jr. went number 4. Malik Nabers went number 6. And Rome Adunze went 9, and then Brock Bowers went 13. So the last receiver, Rome Adunze went number 9. The next receiver was Brian Thomas at 17. The league saw a tier break there, and I could see how the Colts saw it the same way. When they couldn't get that trade up, that's when they stayed put, and they kind of went a different direction. They went, okay, we'll take that top defensive player. And to be honest with you, I mean, we don't know – we're never going to know specifically what were their offers. Could they have gotten one of these done? Could they have added a little bit more? But I like the sounds of that process. They really tried to do the thing that I wanted them to do, which was go up, get your guy, make that huge offensive swing for one more weapon for Anthony Richardson. But you do have to have someone who can agree to do that. I mean, if that's not going to materialize, I don't think they had to force a Brian Thomas Jr. there if they see just a huge – you know, pretty significant teardrop. Instead, they zigged while the rest of the league was zagging, and they got that top pass rusher, which is something that was kind of put off for a while, taking a swing on a developed pass rusher. But here they are, and they did it. And it's the type of thing you need to do in the window with a rookie quarterback. So, without knowing everything about the medicals with Latu, and of course we have to see how he plays out. But I have a hard time criticizing what they did tonight
with Chris. With what Chris Ballard said about why teams didn't want to move down. So what he said essentially was teams didn't want to move all the way down to 15. He referenced, you know, the trade they made in 2018. They went from 3 down to 6, how that was a deal they were willing to make because going down to 6, they were still able to get a premium player in Quentin Nelson, who's proven to be a premium player since then. So you got to, like, let's go through. So part of the reason no one wanted to move down was because there was so much competition for the same positions in that spot. Like, the Jets took a tackle. The Jets traded down one spot with the Vikings to let the Vikings take a quarterback. The reason the Jets only wanted to go one spot down is that everyone in the league knew the Saints were taking a tackle at 14. So if you're the Jets, you don't want to go to 15. If you're one of the teams that wants a quarterback, like, there were 6 quarterbacks in the first 12, you're terrified that you're going to end up like the Broncos and picking – I'm sure Sean Payton says that Bo Nix was who they wanted the most, but, like, you're terrified you're going to end up picking like that, or the Raiders, or being the Raiders and going, well, we're going to take a second tight end because we missed out on all 6 quarterbacks. You know, the way this worked out was all of those teams in the top 14 were kind of playing against each other. And because of that, I think they were worried about going down to 15 because they could see what was coming. They saw that there was 14 offensive players coming off the board. They knew if they went down to 15, they might not get any of the players they were looking for at their positions they needed.
And the other thing about it, too, is, like, obviously quarterback, it was great for the Colts to see 6 go in the first 12 picks. That meant they had a chance at better players. But those six teams are the teams that don't want to trade down. Like, if you're set on drafting a quarterback, it's a race to go up. Like, some of those teams are doing it because they felt like they had to. That's how it felt with the Broncos and the Falcons didn't have to do it. I don't know why they did, but the Broncos, that felt like a pick, like, hey, we have to get a quarterback. It's just that time. And outside of that, it was teams that felt like they had to support their quarterbacks, whether that was the Bears drafting Rome Adunze or the Cardinals drafting Marvin Harrison Jr. The Colts operated in that mindset too. They just drafted Anthony, and that was what I wanted them to do. And it sounds like they tried, but they're trying to convince other teams that are trying to do the exact same thing And what you're offering to in order to do that is probably other picks in this draft. And it seems like the league saw this the same way, where there's just a huge drop off at a certain point in this draft. And I think it probably happens after pick 20 or so. Chris Ballard said there were 19 to 21 first rounders. And I remember when we were doing the exercise yesterday, when we got into the second round, like, oh my gosh, the drop off in talent felt, at least in terms of like pure athletes, the athletic upside, it felt like a very significant drop. And so if the league doesn't, and then there were certain teams that just, they have, they're fine on picks, or they're fine. Like they want those premium level players. I know like what a lot of teams will think, or not a lot of teams, some teams will think like they, just the way GM operates is we're not planning to pick in the top 10 again. And so if you're here and you have a chance at a Roma Dunze, why do you need to trade down and add extra later picks? You could just take Roma Dunze. That's just sort of the struggle that I think any teams had. There was a lot of noise about teams trying to trade up. And then there weren't as many trades as you would have guessed, because it was like no one wanted to trade down. That's just kind of how it felt.
Let's get into this. I think this pod's going to go up in the morning. Unsure. By the way, if anybody's watching this on video, if you see me like spinning my computer around, it's cold. I'm trying to stay warm. let's get into the second and third round, because that's kind of where your focus was tonight. I was writing about Latu and kind of the stuff that happened today. You were kind of focused on, you know, second round, third round, what's up next. What do you see sitting out there?
Well, so like we said, coming into it, it felt like pass catcher and corner were their top needs. Well, those are still out there since they went for the defensive end. So it makes sense that those theoretically could be their next two picks. So I think that's what's most likely. I absolutely think a pass catcher is coming today. If that's what they were trying to move up for, it shows you, yes, I mean, there's a huge difference between Roma Dunze and what's left. But we know they need one. They only have three guys who played last year. And there's still some solid ones out there. So a guy like Texas's Adonai Mitchell. Am I saying that right?
Adonai
Mitchell. That's right. He's a guy that fits him a lot. Like, he's relative athletic score, out of this world, deep speed, size too, which Chris Ballard likes. He's kind of got that package as a player and just kind of 1 year of production. But that guy makes a lot of sense. Troy Franklin out of Oregon's another one we had in our mock draft. He's a big play, you know, explosive player, but he's a little lighter who's out there. So those are a couple of receivers that make sense. And then corner, the guy that we actually mocked in our trade back in the first round, Cooper DeJean out of Iowa, is still out there. Now, I'd imagine that he's going to go kind of early in the second round. They've got to get through like 15 picks in order to make theirs. So if they were willing to trade up and give up picks in the first, maybe they'd consider doing that in the second to address one of these needs. I think it's also quite possible that they just like their quarterback room better than some of us do. So I could see that being more their third round focus. And that's where a guy like Cam Hart, who's a Notre Dame cornerback, is the guy who stands out to me as a great fit for them in terms of, we know they have a type at corner as far as, you know, when they want length and physicality, they don't care as much about the long speed. Cam Hart, there's not a lot of guys that fit that actually on day three, but he's one of them that does. So so those guys kind of stand out. If they were to surprise us, I think it would be, just like I mentioned, if they just decide, you know, we like our corners and we'll just add a guy in day three just to have numbers. If they were to do that, I could see maybe looking like a third round running back. And then kind of one guy that'd be just a total wild card as far as maybe positional needs that you wouldn't think about. But if he happens to be there, it's going to be kind of hard to pass up on is Edgerrin Cooper, the linebacker at Texas A&M, is sort of your, like, you look at his profile just as far as a college player coming into the draft, like it's similar in a lot of ways to what Shaquille Leonard was. Of course, they just had to move off Shaquille Leonard. And like we talk about, linebackers a little underrated of a need. So those are some of the guys I think could be on the radar. But for the most part, I'd be shocked, absolutely shocked, if they don't draft a wide receiver tomorrow. And then that other pick's probably one of those defensive spots.
Yeah, we've heard all the talk about how deep the wide receiver class is kind of all offseason, and that the draft is super deep at wide receiver. But that depth is coming off the board very quickly. The last two picks, or I think three of the last five picks of the first round were wide receivers. Xavier Worthy, Ricky Pearsall, and then Xavier Leggett was the last one, I believe. So I did, I did keep track of something in the back end of the round. But there's seven receivers off the board already. You'd assume that more are going to come off the board, that there's probably some other teams that have needs that like people that are going to make picks tomorrow. So I do think that there's probably – they probably need to get on that. But the other thing I keep thinking about is 46 is actually pretty far down there. You know, like in terms of DeJean, in terms of – we've had other drafts with the Colts where – like Rocky Sin's year, Michael Pittman's year, where they were making a pick right away. And so you could kind of look at the second day board and go, well, they're definitely going to – like it's definitely going to be one of these three or four guys because they had a pick so quickly. That's not the case. This is – they're going to have to wait around unless they move up. They're going to have to wait around a little bit more. And I think I'm just – that the way that the receivers are coming off the board now, I guess the flip side of that is that – you know, several of those teams in the first round have already several of those teams in the tops of the first round, Arizona, New York, Chicago doesn't have a second round pick, right?
Nope.
So those two teams have already addressed theirs, but there's other teams that need them. Like the first pick of the second round is the Buffalo Bills now, who traded away Stephon Diggs. So, yeah, a trade up in the second round is I don't think like super out of the question. They've done it before with Jonathan Taylor. They could probably recoup the pick later on if they wanted to. It'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see how that goes at the top of the second round with teams moving around. I didn't realize until after I was done writing about Laiatu that there was really only one trade before the Colts picked at 15, and it was just a pick swap. Basically, it was just a one pick swap from 10 to 11, which is that's kind of out of the ordinary. Normally, there's a lot more trading, and I think people expected a lot more trading going into this draft. That kind of speaks back to what Ballard was saying, though. Teams didn't want to move down.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that's hard is if they really love the premium talent early on, it's even harder to talk yourself into trading for even veterans because it's that contract savings. If you love a Roma Dunze or if you love Joe Alt or the different premium positions that are there, you're going to get those for 4 years on a rookie deal at positions that as the cap just rose $30 million, those salaries are exploding on the open market. We just saw Amon-Ra St. Brown just got over $100 million across 4 years. So it's just hard to pass that up.
AJ Brown got $32 million per year from the Eagles in average annual value right before the draft started.
Yeah, so it makes sense why they weren't able to make that trade up. I think a trade up in the second round makes sense. Also because they just made so many picks. Last year they made 9 picks on day 3. Like they've done this draft and develop thing for so long that they've filled a lot of positions on their roster with younger players, like, you know, draft picks, just making so many picks. Now, they always could because they can trade out certain positions that are filled with veterans with rookie contracts and do that as a cap savings. But I think what's going to matter more is getting another kind of difference-making player. And so you could see where a trade for, like, Cooper DeJean could make a lot of sense because it solves two needs, really. It solves the cornerback need. Or it gets a cornerback, and it also gets a return man, which I think is going to be a focus for the receivers and corners that they look at, is that they need a return man. They need a punt returner to not overextend Josh Downs in that role. They need two kick returners they trust with the new kickoff rules. I know I asked Chris Ballard about that in Orlando, and he said he's thinking a ton about that and then got real quiet as if, like, we were getting a little too close on some things. So I think that absolutely is part of the equation with some of this. So Cooper DeJean is one who does that. Mitchell didn't do it at Texas, but that was because Xavier Worthy was doing it. But his athletic profile is pretty incredible. I wonder if they'd look at him that way. It's just interesting. It feels like one of those two players, Mitchell or DeJean, it feels like they're going to need to trade up. I'd be surprised if they last at the 46. If they go up for either one of those two, there's a chance they could nail two different positions with one pick, and that would certainly be worth a trade up.
Yeah, the other thing with DeJean, it's just the corner nickel safety versatility. Like, they've never really had a good backup for Kenny Moore. And you could play him on the outside and start him on the outside most of the time. And then if Moore gets hurt, you'd actually have a player to slide into it, which I don't think you make your pick necessarily based on that, but it'd be a nice thing to have. It'd be a really nice thing to have. So that's the Colts Cover 2 podcast from the first round. The Colts used the number 15 pick on Leiatu Latu. It's Chris Ballard hoping he finally has landed his white whale, the premium edge rusher that he's long coveted and hoped for with this team, to team with DeForest Buckner and the rest of the depth they developed on that defensive line. We'll be covering the second and third round tomorrow night. I would say we probably won't pod again until Saturday night after the draft is complete. But keep everything tuned to Indy Star, because we've got a ton of stuff coming out. I've already written four off of Ballard's comments in the first round today. I think you've written at least two. There's going to be a lot more coming on the website. For the Colts Cover 2 podcast, I'm Joel A. Erickson. This is Nate Atkins, and hopefully it warms up tomorrow.